Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline to get a little more insight into what happened last night. He's Matt Moore, senior NBA analyst from the Action Network, host of the Locked On NBA podcast. Matt, great to have you back with us. How are you?
Doing well. How are y'all?
Hey. We're doing well. We had a good basketball game here last night. Kind of felt to me the first team that decided it wanted to play some defense in the second half was the team that was going to win, and that team turned out to be the Cavaliers. The Cavs now sitting really, really pretty, best record in the East. How legit are they in your mind? And I don't mean regular season legit. I mean championship caliber legit.
I mean, they're championship caliber. I don't think you can look at this. At some point, winning the games has to matter. I know that it's like, well, it's a regular season. Okay, but again, if we look back at the history of the NBA, teams that have exceptional regular seasons are in those kind of conversations. I look back at the teams that have won 30 games out of their first 35, and the list is primarily, like, I mean, it's all champions with a handful of disappointments. It's definitely possible, but, like, the odds are that this team makes the conference finals, and then you're in that final four, and you're in the mix for a title. That's where Cleveland undeniably is. Do I love the matchup with Boston? I don't, but I'll tell you this. I don't think Boston's as good as last year, and I don't know that they're going to be able to get to the conference finals, depending on who they face. As much as people, like, kind of underrate the Eastern Conference, there's a lot of really good teams and really good coaches there, and I think there's some weaknesses there. And if the Cavs go up against anybody but Boston, I'm going to like Cleveland to advance to the finals. And if they get there, I'm probably going to like Cleveland to win the title. They're balanced. They're getting better on defense. They have lineup versatility. They can match up with however they need to, and they've got multiple guys now. Darius Garland, I think, is one of the best stories in the NBA after the season he had last year. This team is absolutely legit.
When you look at Evan Mobley, what goes through your mind, too? Because I know Jeff and I talk about this all the time, and you know, we sat here for a year or two and said they will go as Evan Mobley goes, and you know, he has really advanced his game this year, but I want your thoughts.
Yeah, so the best thing here is, you know, it's kind of a reminder of not to put too high of expectations on guys when they come into the league with his profile, because there was this expectation for him to be a dominant player immediately, and instead it was like, wow, he's going to be a really great defender. But what about the offense? And much like Jaren Jackson Jr., who's having an incredible year for the Grizzlies, like, Mobley started to add go-to moves into his offense. He understands his spots. He understands his shots. And he's finding ways to get to those more and more consistently. He's understanding how to manage the matchups that he's faced with. And what's great about Mobley right now is that he's able to fill in the gaps where Darius creates downhill and draws help, and he hits those little flip shots. Or he gets a mismatch underneath, and he's finishing at the rim. His ability to kind of do what they need makes him so much more valuable in today's NBA, especially as a big man. And then you add on top of it his defensive instincts. He was the best defender on Shea by a mile. If they meet up in the finals, Evan needs to probably take the full-time assignment on Shea, and that's incredible for a power forward center. So I think that, you know, as far as like what he can be, I don't know what that looks like. It depends on how his offensive game develops. But he's already one of the most impactful players in the league. He's a serious candidate for DPOY, and he's only getting better offensively.
Matt Moore joining us, senior NBA analyst from the Action Network, Locked On NBA podcast. The backcourt has been obviously one of the keys to this thing since they brought Donovan Mitchell to town. Do you like the combination of Mitchell and Garland? It obviously clicks in the regular season. Can it carry you into the postseason and beyond?
Yeah, so I think the key here is that you need the matchup optionality. I understand the idea of, like, we've always seen superstars be the best in the playoffs. Are we really seeing that now? Like, I don't look at the Celtics last year. Jason Tatum wasn't the best player on Boston last year, and they won the title. We're seeing this kind of evolve with where the game is at and how the CBA has changed things dramatically. And so there may be a series where, yeah, Donovan's going to go off. They don't have any sort of matchup for him. He's in a groove. He's able to take advantage of that matchup, and he's the best player for the Cavs. The next round, oh, they've got a defender who can actually kind of neutralize Mitchell in a scheme to take him out of it. Garland's going to step up and be the difference. Maybe it's the front court. You know, their ability to win with different ways is so big, because right now in the NBA, in this kind of era of parity, it really is about your matchups. And having two guys with different skill sets And I want to give Donovan Mitchell a ton of credit because he's taken a step back this year in terms of how much he dominates the ball and his role. He could be chasing stats to try and win MVP, and he's not. And his taking a step back has allowed them to be better, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
I think a lot of fans, and I know we're still sitting here just after the new year, but and I think Cavalier fans have kind of accepted where we are in this position with Kenny Atchison. Just your thoughts on what he's been able to do in such a short period of time, and what exactly did J.B. Bickerstaff leave for him that the cupboard was – I mean, the cupboard was clearly not bare. He just had to rearrange the food, right? Is that the way it looks?
I think it's more of like this. Okay, so I think JB cooked good meals.
Okay.
But there wasn't enough seasoning. And Atkinson's brought the spice. And like that to me is really what it comes down to.
Nice.
Because if you look at it, JB's doing a great job in Detroit. He's doing a phenomenal job in Detroit because he's able to install good systems that work. He gets your offense to generate good shots. He gets your defense to allow only pretty bad shots. He increases discipline and accountability. All of those things were evident with Cleveland. But the problem was he couldn't make the players individually better. And that's what I think Atkinson has done, is he's getting the most out of Darius. He's getting the most out of Mobley. He's getting the most out of Caris LeVert. What Atkinson's done is maximize on both an individual skill and within the flow of the game, those players' abilities. So he is putting those guys in the best position and the team in the best position, whereas JB was really good at putting the team in a good position to win. Like, JB set the table, and Atkinson's putting together the final finished meal.
If you're the Cavs and you're Kobe Altman, you're Mike Gansey, you're sitting there watching this, you're winning games like crazy, you have the best regular season record in the NBA, and you know you're a front office that has always tinkered with the roster by the trade deadline, what are you thinking now?
I mean, from everything I've heard, they're still shopping. They still want another wing. Mm. I think the idea is, you know, when you're in the Cavs position, you don't need a primary ball handler, you don't need a backup point guard, and you don't need front court help because you can stagger Jarrett and Mobley. So you're set. Like, you're set at the biggest kind of question marks in the league right now. But the idea has been in the league, and it continues to be, you could never have enough wings. And if you can get an upgrade where it's like, yeah, we like Max Strus. Can we get one better? Yeah, Okoro's having a great season. Can we get one better? We're 6-1 when Dean Wade plays basketball for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Okay, but can we get one better? And that's the kind of question I think that they're faced with, and that's why they keep looking at the market is, don't close off opportunities, don't be complacent, and if an opportunity arises for you to keep some of that depth but improve some of it, you take it. And that, to me, that's what I continue to hear, is that they're still shopping for one more wing.
How high would you go on your rotation in giving up somebody to make that happen?
I mean, I think outside of the core four and LeVert, I think you got to be open to pretty much everybody, you know. And it's like me personally, as king of the Dean Wade hive, I would not deal him because of what he brings to the table. But like, it's still Dean Wade, and you'd have to take a look at those kind of options. It kind of depends on what you're looking at. But also with how good their roster is, you can have a little bit more flexibility with what you do on your draft assets. You can have a little bit of, you know, versatility with what you do with the young guys. So they've got some options to move around the margins here with a lot of teams who are pretty desperate to make moves given how the CBA is crushing them right now.
How do you think the game played out last night? I mean, I know we're sitting here in Cleveland and we're like, oh, great game, two best teams in the NBA. And I would assume that most guys had their eyes on this game, most guys and gals that care about the NBA had their eyes on this game last night. And Jeff and I were talking about how the NBA might not exactly love the fact that it's Cleveland, Oklahoma City that are, you know, have dominated the game so far, and if that should turn into what could be an NBA Finals down the road. How do you think most people envisioned last night's game? Good game, you know, two solid teams, but maybe not there at the end. But, like, give me a national perspective on what we watched last night.
I think every national person that covers the NBA loved it and thought it was phenomenal and thought it was such great basketball and a refreshing change of pace. And I think that they're excited to see and would love to see these two teams meet in the finals because they're both that good and that interesting and that fun. I think TV executives were crying, and that's an NBA problem. That's a league provider problem. And I want to be clear on this. The NBA takes a lot of flack for this, about them not promoting these type of teams more. The problem is not the NBA. They want to promote all their teams. They really do. They genuinely want to promote all their teams. But the networks are just like, okay, that's fun. But, like, could we have LeBron and the Lakers versus the Warriors just, like, every night? Could we just do that every time? And it's obnoxious, short-sighted, and stupid. Every sports fan, forget basketball fans, any sports fan that watched that game last night would have walked away being like, that was awesome. That's what sports need to be about. That's what sports should be about. Should be about. That's what the other leagues get, and the NBA has not. And I think last night was great for the league, the sport, and those teams.
I agree with you completely. I can't tell you how tired I get of watching the same teams on the Lakers in particular, and LeBron and Golden State, when right now they're kind of middle of the road teams. I think that's something the NBA has to overcome. The NFL has figured it out, Matt. How does the NBA figure that out?
I think they're working on it. You know, they wanted more parity and they've got it, but they've got to be able to put these new players up there. And I am hopeful, cautiously, very cautiously hopeful, that Amazon and NBC are going to get it, that they're going to actually look at this and be like, hey, what if we didn't talk about how irrelevant everyone is? Hey, what if we talked about how we don't know who any of these players are? What if we actually, like, celebrated the sport and what's good about it and hyped this as a matchup with stakes? Like, what if we actually treated the game with respect? I'm hopeful that changes next year, starting with a new team. And if it doesn't, I think the biggest thing is just you got to give these guys opportunities. Shea's number one in the West for guards for all-star votes. Jokic is number one in the West for front court votes. Like, the people see these guys. The sports fans see these guys. They just don't know them yet because you haven't given them a chance. Give them a chance. Give the Cavaliers a chance, and people are going to walk away really impressed and excited and want to watch them again.
Other than the Cavs, other than the Celtics, if you're looking for somebody to win the Eastern Conference, who would it be?
Everyone's going to say New York, and mine's Orlando. So Orlando is the only team. If you go back and watch their Boston games, they don't let them get up threes. And Boston all of a sudden gets real nervous and real tight when that happens. When they can't just run their offense and throw up 53s a game, it gets really tight. And the question is, like, come on, Orlando can't score with them. But we don't know that yet, because when they had Paolo Banchero at the start of the season, they were good enough offensively. Their ball was really moving. They actually were a really good offensive team. Then Paolo goes down, and they get worse, and they fall into the teens. And then Franz goes down, and they fall into the bottom five. So the question is going to be, can they make a trade deadline move to get them another scorer, any sort of shooter, and can they get Franz and Paolo back healthy? I think with those two guys, by the end of the season, they're the sleeper in the East that could make a real run.
Matt, great to have you with us. Thanks, Matt, for the insight.
Thanks, guys.
Matt Morris, senior NBA analyst for the Action Network. His podcast, the Locked On NBA podcast. Go take a listen.